From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
And good evening, everyone. Boy, we have a busy night ahead of us tonight. Tonight, we're going to speak to Jossie Banstuer from Aruba. There has been breaking news in the disappearance of Natalie Holloway. There's a alleged confession that apparently has been recorded in an undercover sting operation by crime reporter Peter DeVries. We'll talk to Jossie a little bit later. We're going to talk to Joel Brodsky, the attorney for Drew Peterson. Drew Peterson, the former police sergeant, his wife Stacy Peterson is missing, and there is a homicide investigation going on, or a missing persons investigation, whatever you want to call it. We have Jeremy Reynolds. He is from the New Mexico-based Joy Junction Incorporated. He helps missing people. Missing people, lost people, homeless people, you name it, that can fall into the same category. You can be missing and you can be homeless, you can be lost, you can be whatever. And we don't hear a lot about the homeless, and we're going to talk to Dr. Jeremy Reynolds a little bit later. And then Mary Beth Brown is a best-selling author and speaker, and she's the author of the New York Times best-selling and USA Today best-selling book, Hand of Providence, and she has a new book out called The Life of a Steel Magnolia that talks about Condoleezza Rice. We're going to talk a little politics tonight. We'll start off first with Dr. Jeremy Reynolds from Joy Junction. I sat down earlier with him today, and we talked about those that are homeless and what he is doing for them, the great work that they are doing for them down in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I've been following some of the news reports, especially on Bill O'Reilly's O'Reilly Factor lately, and one of the few times I've disagreed with Mr. O'Reilly is some of the reporting that he's been doing on the homeless. I think he's out to lunch, to be quite frank here. Mr. O'Reilly usually covers stories like this professionally, but he seems to have his mind fixed on another idea, and we won't get into that right now. But tonight, I have Dr. Jeremy Reynolds. He's an author, speaker, and writer, and he's the founder of the New Mexico-based Joy Junction, which is one of the few nonprofit faith-based organizations in the United States, and is dedicated to serving homeless families. He also has authored a new book called The Face of Homelessness that will be released in April 2008. Looks like. Dr. Reynolds, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Dana. How are things going with you this Friday? Have a good Friday?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. It's very cold up here, but that's okay. That's part of living in Canada. You have to enjoy snow and ice. Now, my show, as you and I have discussed, goes worldwide across North America on satellite, all over the place, and everyone is aware of homeless issues. We see the homeless. We hear about the homeless. And again, I had to preface this a little bit with O'Reilly. I'm not sure if you're aware of the commentary that he's been making lately, especially about military homeless. But what we don't see is a lot of reporting, true reporting about homeless. We see the panhandler, and I hate to use that term, ask you for a buck for a cup of coffee, but there's a lot more to this. Let's talk about Joy Junction, and then we'll get into the book.
Yeah, and we can sure also address Mr. O'Reilly's comments later if you want. I was familiar, or am familiar with those, and
actually, let's start on that right now then, if you are. Let's get right to it then.
Yeah, my understanding is that John Edwards, who has just dropped out of the race, as you know, I guess 2 or 3 weeks ago, made a comment saying something to the effect of the fact that we had almost or about 200,000 veterans, homeless veterans, sleeping in alleyways, under a bridge, and so on and so forth, was outrageous, or words to that effect, and I agree with him, it is. And then Mr. O'Reilly did like a counter-attack or punch and said basically the only thing that's sleeping under a bridge is Mr. Edwards' brain, is what I understand Mr. O'Reilly said.
Yeah, good grief.
And of course some savvy people did some research and discovered that, in fact, it wasn't Mr. Edwards' brain that was sleeping under a bridge. It was Bill O'Reilly's in this case. And I had been a guest on with Bill in two interviews back a few years ago. And so I am familiar with his stance. And because basically some people went to the Veterans Administration website and discovered that John Edwards was preaching or speaking directly from the VA website that said there are as many as 200,000 homeless veterans. And I think it's a shame. And we have, as of a week or so ago, we had 17 of those staying at Joy Junction, which is New Mexico's largest emergency homeless shelter.
Now, you yourself, going back to 1982, were homeless. You have obviously firsthand experience, and of course all the experience that you've gone through with Joy Junction. What do we see in the media? You know, like I said, you don't see a lot. You see what you see as an individual. You know, Joe and Mary public that maybe follow stories now and then or try to do something. And unfortunately, there's the odd person that gets or runs afoul of the law, and they're ordered to do some community service, so maybe they go and work in a homeless shelter, but they really don't understand what this is all about and what the big picture about being homeless in America is. Maybe you could share that with us a bit.
I'd be happy to, Dana. One interesting thing to notice, and you asked me about an issue which is really dear to my heart and one which I have quite extensive knowledge of. I did my PhD dissertation. I got my PhD in education at Biola University in Los Angeles. Did my dissertation on how the media cover the homeless. Well, sure, you know, Dana, you know that most of us, you know, we have feeling, thoughts, and opinions about everything, right? You know, from everything. But many of our opinions are shaped, formed, and colored by what we read in the media, see here on the media, because we don't have a chance to see, to actually get personally involved in a lot of things about which we have feelings about. Well, 20, 25 years ago, which was when the last major study of the media and the homeless, you know, was done, it sort of was a case of many of the media reports were there, but for the grace of God, go you and I, one paycheck away from poverty and so on. Right. They were very sympathetic reports, as a rule, to the homeless. Well, I did, and that was back in the late 80s, done by a research group out of D.C., I do believe. Now, I did the study in 2003 through 2004-ish, or something like that. And I went to a big media database and did a study on the number of broadcast reports for 1 year using the word homeless from NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, CNN, maybe one or two others, plus the LA Times, the Albuquerque Journal, and the New York Times. I sort of did a study on how they treat the issue of homelessness. There were four categories in the research I did. But category number two was if the report dealt with the issue of homelessness. You know, Dana and Jeremy are homeless, why they're homeless, and so on. And then category number three was the one I want to focus on. And category number three was crimes committed by or against the homeless.
Right.
And basically, Dana, most of the broadcast news reporting had shifted to crimes committed by or against the homeless. During the year of stories that I analyzed, it was when, like, the Elizabeth Smart kidnapping was at its sort of zenith or hype.
Right.
So, you know, as you know, there was a so-called self-styled homeless prophet, you know, that kidnapped Elizabeth.
Right.
The D.C. snipers are out there, too. And so they stayed in the homeless agency. There was also a case of a lady Peterson went for a walk in the park frequented by the homeless.
Yeah.
So here's what I'm saying, where it should grab the attention of our listeners. My contention in my doctoral work was that when you keep on repeating something, and we heard these stories ad nauseum, different variations of the same story, when you continuously link the word homeless with the issue of a crime, well, Dana, guess what folks think? They begin to think, because you hear it, and you hear it, and you hear it, they begin to think, oh, the homeless are criminals.
Right, exactly.
Which isn't true. And you know what, Dana? One thing that we've discovered, you know, at Joy Junction, and so what we have to do at Joy Junction is get the word out. The local media here in Albuquerque have been wonderful to us, but we're having to, like, try to re-educate the public to say, hey, you know what? there are, there is an escalating an escalating number of homeless, escalating exponentially. So they're becoming homeless in the United States. And you know what, Dana? These are people just like you and me, except they've gone through traumatizing influences in their lives. Because a lot of conservatives like Mr. O'Reilly and others tend to say, hey, you know what? Dana's been homeless for 10 years. You know, give the dude a few Bible verses. Give him the opportunity to get a job. And if he doesn't get back on his feet, then you know what? Dana has something wrong with him. You know what, Dana? What we have discovered? You may have been through so much terror, so much trauma, so much drama, that you are emotionally and psychologically unable to do what Mr. O'Reilly and others of his ilk want. We're trying to educate the public to say that, you know, nobody wants to be homeless. If somebody is not acting in a fashion conducive towards getting back on their feet again, it's the fact that they are emotionally unable to do so. So we're wanting to give that message to people like Mr. O'Reilly in order so he can start disseminating proper information and not lies.
Yeah, and the narrow-mindedness of some of these broadcasters, whether on TV, radio, or in the print media, is disturbing, to say the least, because, again, I hate repeating myself, but they don't look at the big picture. The stats I'm looking at here, just for your organization, Joy Junction is helping 300 people a night, serving more than 100,000 meals a year. You know, it says, I like this part, this shelter gives a hand up, not a handout, and that is so important. It's to bring...
Well, we absolutely do, Dana, and we have a yearly budget of $1.6 million a year, which myself and a colleague, Roseanne, basically have to be out on the streets, basically, you know, telling the story of the homeless to say, you know what, folks, you're not supporting so-called bums, you're supporting people that have just had a bad break in life, you know, and isn't this what the American dream is all about? Giving a second chance to people. Wasn't that what was supposed to be to make us a great country? Not for us to be obnoxious and judgmental, say, hey, I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps. If you can't do it, you're a bum. It was to look a little bit further beyond the outer circumstances, which Fox News is adept at doing. And, you know, when I did my PhD dissertation, Dana, I found that in terms of dealing with issues, in dealing with crimes committed by the homeless, sadly, Fox News was a leader in doing that.
Yeah, and then the system is totally unfair, and this is a show for another time as far as buying your defense and public defenders that look after homeless cases, you know as well as I do, push them through the system, and you have to, the statistics are probably staggering for those.
Horrendous, they're horrendous, yeah. Dana. What I want to do, if I can also, if we, just while we have chance, We love people to get to know more about us, because you know what, also, Dana, we are one of a very few shelters in the United States to take care of the entire family. I wonder if I might give an address and a web address where people can get more information. Would you permit me to do that?
Absolutely. Please do.
Okay, our address is Joy Junction, Department 91361. That's Joy Junction, Department 91361. P.O. Box 27693, P.O. Box 27693, Albuquerque. If you're honest and you can't spell Albuquerque like I can sometimes, just ALB dot New Mexico 87125, and our website is joyjunction.org.
Absolutely. And for those of you that missed that, of course, the show is available for download, replay, podcast later on. Just go back and re-listen to the interview, and you can get that there. And, of course, you would appreciate any sort of donation that would come your way, would you not, sir?
We absolutely would. You know what, Daniel? It seems funny, but, you know, a lot of people, especially evangelical Christians, are willing to, like, to go out. We encourage people to go on short-term mission trips to go and educate themselves as to what's going on outside the boundaries of the United States. Because sometimes I believe, you know, I'm English originally, but sometimes I've discovered that Americans tend to be very insular, and we tend to forget what's going on inside the rest of the world. We have a mission field. In fact, wherever you're listening to this, if you have a homeless ministry in your neighborhood, there is a mission field of hurting homeless people who would love your help. We welcome you to come down and bring us stuff. You know, some of the stuff we need, Dana, that people don't think about, maybe some big executive from maybe one of the big box stores listening, you know, can give us bleach, can give us toilet paper, can give us big stuff that we need to cope to service adequately our ever-expanding numbers. Because, you know, as you so adequately said, Dana, 4 years ago, 150 people a night. 4.5 years later, 300.
Wow. You know, and that's just, it's mind-boggling. Dr. Jeremy Reynolds from Joy Junction is here. He's the author of a new book, The Face of Homelessness. Well, we have you here for a couple more minutes. Dr. Reynolds, let's talk about the book.
Let's talk about, we are so excited, Dana, about the book. It is just so exciting. Again, it is called The Face of Homelessness, and it deals with two issues. What it deals with is it deals with people that have come to our agency / faith-based ministry, and these are people that have had horrible circumstances occur in their lives, and they just need a hand up. And so we look at them and just say, hey, you know what? We have a faith-based recovery program. People can check in for a night or a month, 6 month life recovery program. We call the Christ Empower program, or 1 to 3 years of transitional housing. What we do for the book, Daniel, we've taken some of the stories of people that have gotten off meth, crack, alcohol, or whatever, or just made a success of their life once they met Jesus at Joy Junction, and they've got back on their feet again. We have told the stories in this book. And then my beautiful colleague, Roseanne, also, who's our chief administrative officer at Joy Junction. You can see a picture by going to joyjunction.org also. We have like a side ministry, which is becoming increasingly important, Dana. We will stop on the streets of and around Albuquerque sometimes also for out of town business, you know, other areas also. And we'll get direct to maybe stop and talk to a homeless person, buy him or her a meal, some food, and listen to their story. And these are not always success stories. Do I have time to tell you one quick story, Dana?
Absolutely.
Okay, a few weeks ago, I was at the post office. Came out of a post office and saw this guy, and he had like two teeth, was wrapped up. It was a freezing cold day, almost like a Canadian day in Albuquerque.
Right.
And this guy was like breathing booze fumes all over me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him if he had a place to stay. He said no. And I said, are you cold? He said, no, I'm warm. But you know what, Dana? He was so heavily inebriated, the warmth of the alcohol was keeping him warm.
Right.
So I said, would you like a ride to a safe place to stay at Joy Junction? He said, well, yeah, can I go, like, wait in the local McDonald's? I said, sure. So my driver came up to get him an hour or so later. You know what, Dana? He didn't want to get rid of his alcohol. And so I guess my thought was this. We didn't take him, but my thought afterwards, Roseanne asked me, she said, maybe we should have fibbed to him and said, well, you know, perhaps we should have said, okay, you can go down with your alcohol. Then hopefully he was so drunk he wouldn't have remembered it, because by so doing, we could have at least have gotten him a warm place to stay for the night. Maybe some of our listeners would go, well, you can't lie. Well, you
sure.
Know what, Dana? There was a lady in the Second World War called Corrie ten Boom, and she was hiding Jews. When the Nazis asked her if she was hiding Jews, she said no.
Right.
Well, she disobeyed one of God's lower laws to accommodate one of God's higher laws. And I would really have felt quite happy telling this guy he could have his alcohol and throwing it out, because I would want his life to be spared from the cold streets of Albuquerque, so he could begin to have some of the life he was meant to have in the first place.
Yeah, and it's a big story. And Dr. Reynolds, I want to thank you for spending some time with us, and hopefully we can sit down and do this again sometime.
We love it, folks. Hey, go to Department 91361, P.O. Box 27693, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87125. Do tell us you heard us on the Flying Monkeys Radio, right, Dan?
Yeah, exactly.
Flying Monkeys Radio, tell your friends about the show. We will have this available hopefully on our website soon. And hey, Dana, thank you so much. It's been great. Hopefully we can do it again soon.
Thank you, Dr. Reynolds.
Thank you, Dana. Have a great day.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye. And just to remind you that, of course, this is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network, not the Flying Monkeys, but some of us do fly now and then. And it's a great organization, of course, Joy Junction. And that's Dr. Jeremy Reynolds. We'll be right back.
We're back with more of the Dana Pretzer Show on ScaredMonkeysRadio.com.
Okay, we're back. What do you look for in a politician? I look for three things. I look for honesty, or what I perceive to be honesty, sincerity, and I look at someone who can rebound from adversity or take a problem and run with it. Now, with the American election going on right now, of course, the show goes across the world, North America, you name it. But one can't help but be fascinated with what's going on in the United States right now, seeing the races. It looks like John McCain will be the GOP nominee. And there's been a lot of banter going around lately. Who might that vice president be that's going to be on the ticket with him? A lot of people have suggested Condoleezza Rice. When you look at Condoleezza Rice, you see sincerity. You see honesty. You see all those traits. Is she interested? I don't know. I thought what we do tonight in tonight's political segment is bring on Mary Beth Brown. Mary Beth is a best-selling author and speaker. She is the author of the New York Times and USA Today best-selling book, Hand of Providence, The Strong and Quiet Faith of Ronald Reagan. And she's written a new book called The Life of a Steel Magnolia, or The Life of Steel Magnolia. I think I just said that and repeating myself tonight. And we're going to talk a little bit about Condoleezza Rice. Mary Beth, welcome to the program.
Oh, good evening, Dana. It's great to be with you and your listeners tonight.
No, this is, like I said, my audience goes across the world. We do have a huge basis in North America. But one, no matter where you are, you can't help but be fascinated with the American election process and what's going on right now. Some look at the bantering and the bickering. Some look at I look at the big picture. And this seems fascinating right now. And I got to ask you, why did you write Condi, The Life of a Steel Magnolia? It looks to me like it's going to be a big hit for you.
Well, Condoleezza Rice is just a fascinating person. She's talented and brilliant in so many different areas. But I found her to be a real inspiration. She's a very inspiring person. Her life story reads like a novel in that she's a woman who's overcome tremendous obstacles and is successful despite great odds. She was born in segregated south of Birmingham, Alabama, in a time of violence and upheaval because of the civil rights movement. And because of her own determination and drive, today she's one of the most powerful women in the world. She's a very inspiring woman.
And working for, if I can use that term, and that's a bit of a basic term, but being part of an administration, especially in this last year or so, that is not very popular, and again, being able to rebound from and deal with adversity is a huge trait that I look at, and you must cover that in your book as far as this whole, all you see in the media lately is Bush, Bush, Bush. I find it very disrespectful. He's the president of the United States, but they always use the last name. And I could go on and on about that, but that's not why we're here to talk to you. And she herself has come under attack on and on and on again, but she's able to rebound from that.
She is. Her parents were amazing people. She was an only child. Her father was a minister and also was a football coach at the local high school, and her mother was a teacher. And they had a belief that one day the walls of segregation would come down, and they wanted their daughter to be ready for it. So they instilled in her self-confidence and an excellent education. She started playing the piano when she was only 3 years old, was very good, very talented, and was the first black girl to go into the Birmingham Music Conservatory when she was a young girl. She also took French lessons, ballet, and she also became a competitive ice skater. So she was an extremely well-rounded little girl.
What was one of the most surprising things in your research about Condoleezza Rice that you found?
What I found was so surprising was her optimism. I think most people are used to seeing her giving State Department briefings and speeches, and of course they're very serious subjects, but she's an optimist. That was something that I found very helpful to myself when I would read different things that she would say. I put a lot of her own words into my book because she says so many inspiring things that I think could help other people. One thing she said when she was speaking to college students, she said that they had five things that they should learn. And one was she really recommends that they find their passion in life. And she said it was a responsibility for them to do that, to cultivate humility, use reason, be optimistic, and serve others. When I heard her speak about a year ago, she was speaking about how we need to remember that good things take a long time. And in our fast-paced society, we're used to getting fast results. And she reminded me and others that good things take a long time, and she used three examples. She used the founding of the United States of America, the ending of slavery in the United States, and the fall of the Soviet Union. And so she was very good at putting things into perspective.
You know, when you talk about life lessons, we all learn from each other. And I'm sure that you've learned from Condoleezza Rice. And one of the things that she likes to say, one of the catchphrases, I guess I could use that term, is that life is too short. And I think that's so important for all of us to remember. What's the most important life lesson that Condoleezza Rice has taught you?
I think it would be this one. She also says, get over it and move on to the next thing.
Right.
She recommends that you don't dwell too long on bad situations in the past. And I think it's easy to do sometimes. You know, if we've made some mistake or something bad has happened, people can get caught up in that and not move on with their life. And now I catch myself, if I think back, oh, I wish I'd done this differently, I just now say, okay, I need to get over it and move on to the next thing. And so that's really helped me.
You know, I don't like the race aspect of the election campaign, the way that it's going right now, and some people bringing in race with, of course, Barack Obama. But then, on the other hand, without sounding too crude, if it's time to have a black man as president, why not have a black gal as vice president? And let's progress on with life here. Like she says, life's too short. Your thoughts on that and how she would handle the race aspect of this?
Well, she, of course, is very talented in foreign policy. She has shown that she has grace under fire, especially we saw that with the 9/11 terrorism.
Yes.
When she was at the Stanford University, she was the provost, which is the number two person there, and has to handle the budget. The budget was $40 million over budget when she became provost. Within 2 years, she was able to balance the budget, but she had to make a lot of very difficult decisions. And she said that she had to teach the university, they had to learn that they can't spend money they don't have.
Right.
And I think what a lot of people don't recognize is when she got her master's degree at Notre Dame, she got a minor in economics, so she even has a background in, you know, administration type things. And this is really a unique and historic campaign this year. And it is being dominated by issues of race and gender. And with Condi, I believe the Republican Party can regain its historic place as the party of equality based on merit. And I think Condi is the logical choice. I also believe that you need to look at the individual. And that is what Condi also believes. That was one thing that really drew her to the Republican Party, she said, was because they looked at her as an individual.
Absolutely, and what you say is so true. Of course, there are many books written about Condoleezza Rice. You have to do is just go onto Google and search them. And if you want information on my guest book, again, Condi, The Life of a Steel Magnolia, just go to our website at scaredmonkeys.com, and you'll see a link. I believe it takes you to Amazon to get the book there. But I'll ask you one final question here, Mary Beth. What is different about your book to other books about Condoleezza Rice?
Well, my book is positive and uplifting while being informative, and I think some of the other ones have gotten bogged down with foreign policy details.
Right.
And also, they're also, many of them are written by liberals, so they're critical of Condi. And I've just poured through thousands of pages of research, and I wrote a story which paints a picture. I like to write in a, you know, it's a biography, but I don't like to say this happened, this happened, this happened. I like to put it in a form that you would read it like a novel and make it enjoyable. And I've just taken the choice bits of information that I found in the research that I believe that people would find interesting and also inspirational.
Absolutely. The book is Condi, The Life of a Steel Magnolia. Again, go to our website at scaredmonkeys.com, and it'll take you to the link. Mary Beth Brown, thank you. I appreciate it, and good luck with the book.
Oh, thank you. I also have a website. It's condibook.com with a lot more information on the book.
Absolutely. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. I sat down today a little bit earlier with Jossie Manster, and I'm hoping that after I play this clip of a short interview that I did with Jossie, that I can take a few calls from you, the listener, about what he has to say and what's been happening here in, let's call Aruba Never Never Land. It seems to change all the time. Is this finally the break that we've all been looking for? Here's what Jossie had to say. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. Have you been following the breaking news out of Aruba? The Peter DeVries program has made an announcement that they've solved the case of the disappearance of Alabama teenager Natalie Holloway. That they have a confession, and they'll be showing it Sunday night. Well, have we heard things that have come out of Aruba before that we've been disappointed about? Well, yes, most recently the prosecution came out with some reports, and they rearrested the suspects, saying they had new evidence and it turned out to be nothing. But does this new confession and Peter DeVries turn into this case being solved? I thought I'd go out to Aruba and talk to Jossie Manster and see what he had to say. Hi, Jossie.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Now, you must be, just like everyone else, wondering just what the heck's going on with this confession. What can you tell us what you've heard there?
You know, all the news is coming from Holland. I mean, everything is being published in the Dutch newspapers. The largest newspaper that they have there, which is the Telegraaf, is covering the case on its front page. So they're giving it a lot of importance. And they're familiar with De Vries. They think he's a serious man. He used to be a police investigator before he became a crime reporter. And he is authorized to do investigations of this sort. So we hear that in one way or another, with an undercover camera operation, he managed to get Joran on tape with a confession of what happened to Natalie and how they disposed of her body, or he disposed of her body.
What we're also hearing too, Jossie, and I'm not sure if you have or not, that this tape does not involve or implicate the Kelpo brothers. That does not mean that they're not involved. It's just saying what the tape says. What can you tell us about that?
No, the tape is exclusively with Joran. Apparently there was a friend of Joran that he knew from Aruba with whom he spoke. He was very comfortable with him, and he began telling him things about the case and was not aware that he was being recorded by a camera that De Vries had put into operations for quite a few months.
Now, you and I both know that sting operations sometimes are used to solve crime, to get suspects to confess to their crimes. But some red flags have popped up that this tape apparently will be shown on Sunday night, and the prosecution hasn't done anything with it yet. Some would question that if they had something and it was that important, they should have rushed out right away. But is this maybe a case, Jossie, where finally the prosecution is not going to say anything, they're not going to rush to judgment and see exactly what they have before they react?
No, they have reacted, but what they did was today they put out another press release in which they tried to distance themselves from the undercover operations, in the sense that they say that they had nothing to do with it, it was not authorized by them, but that the recording that was presented to them here by De Vries a week ago is valid, it's shocking, it's admissible, because we have to remember that in Holland they have a special permit or authorization that they give, it's called the BOB. Mm-hmm. in das besondere Opsporingsbefugtheit. That means translated that he has the authority to do this kind of investigation there. So we presume that on the basis of that, this tape will be admissible in court.
Some American TV commentators have made statements saying that, well, sometimes people confess to things that they don't normally do. That sounds kind of crazy to me. And if anything, a suspect or someone that gets caught in a sting like this, the term bragging could be used along with confession. What are your thoughts on that?
No, there was no bribery involved here. There was no pressure, no co-action activity taking place. It's just that he opened up or loosened up, apparently, with this man in whom he had a lot of trust.
No, I didn't mean coercion. I meant more of a bragging rights, somebody boasting that this is what they've done. And maybe this is a case where somebody was just talking too much and didn't realize he was being taped at the time.
But that's possible. There's always a possibility that I don't think a man or a boy or whatever you want to consider you're in at this stage of his life, in the predicament that he's in now, and with all the eyes of the world on him, being still the main suspect, I don't think he's going to lie about a thing like this.
Yeah.
And he didn't have an audience to do it to. It was just spoken in confidence. And that we will see Sunday when the priest decides to pass the whole recording that he has.
Does this TV show, is it available in Aruba?
We can see it in Aruba, yes.
Now, has there been any comment from the prosecution's department as far as, okay, the show comes out Sunday, we will make an announcement on Monday, or is it just a wait and see?
No, it's a wait and see, but they did put out a press release today in which they did confirm that the prosecution has reopened the case based on the whatever they saw on this recording that the priest made.
Now, have you heard anything from the family of Joran van der Sloot or the attorneys or the Kelpos themselves? Of course, our old friend Joe Tacopina has been all over the airwaves spouting off the innocence of his client. However, we've heard nothing from anyone else. Have you heard anything?
Well, I saw some kind of news in Holland in which the father here made a statement that Joran was not arrested. And we know that because we confirmed it with both the prosecution and with the police people that we have contacts with. That there were rumors going around today, the whole day practically, that he had been arrested again in Holland. That's not true. As far as it was confirmed to us by these two instances that are involved in the investigation, they have absolutely no knowledge of that.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens on Sunday night, and I'm sure your newspaper diario will be right on top of it. Jossie, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Jossie Manser. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens. The show is Sunday night. I'm sure it will open up a huge can of worms, or it'll open up a huge can of disappointment once again. What comes out of Aruba usually is both. I'm Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And that was my conversation with Jossie Manser earlier today. since then, there's been a lot of damage control, including reports saying that Joran van der Sloot himself admits that, yes, there is a tape, and yes, there is a confession, but he was lying. If there were. And, you know, it just makes you want to laugh. I'm not sure what else someone would say in a situation like this, but I was lying, or I didn't mean it, or I was just joking. I hope that there's more to this than him coming out now and saying, oh, I didn't mean it, because we've been down that road before where he has made statements and then taken them back and then lied and didn't lie and lie and didn't lie, and it goes on and on and on. Hopefully there's some corroborating evidence to go along with this, and Sunday night will be very interesting. Aruba can't. Well, they shouldn't. Well, let's hope that they don't drop the ball with this one. We got a couple of minutes before I bring on Joel Brodsky, attorney for Drew Peterson. So if you'd like to sneak in a quick call, 306-842-7884, 306-842-7884. Is this the break that they've finally been waiting for? Will this case finally go to a court of competent jurisdiction to determine the guilt or innocence of the suspects? Will Natalie Holloway be found and taken home to her family where she can be laid to rest in peace? Or is this just another act of stupidity from the Arubans? Peter DeVries does have some credibility. He certainly has something more than what Aruban law enforcement have done in 2.5 years. So let's hope that there's something here, although it should be noted that Aruban law enforcement should be very ashamed that it takes a TV host, a crime reporter, if you may, to go out and get the case solved. We shall see. There's a huge tease. Nothing more is being released than just that. We'll have to wait till Sunday to find out the whole story. Of course, it'll be widely reported on cable news here on Scared Monkeys Radio at the blog scaredmonkeys.com and wherever else you can find what's going on. Hopefully this information will be available and ready for us. I wouldn't read too much into what you hear some of the talking heads saying on some of the cable news shows. We have one host that, of course, she uses the term, it was inclined to believe Mr. Vandersloot. She will probably come out if this leads to something and take that back, and that's admirable of her. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. The whole thing is that we hope for the family. We hope that the family has some answers, finally, in this whole situation. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pritzer. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, your host, Dana Pritzer.
Have you been following the it's almost to the point where it's just getting incredibly stupid. I'm not making light of the case of Stacy Peterson, of course, is missing. There are questions surrounding that. There's a huge investigation going on. Kathleen Savio, a reinvestigation as far as to how she died. But the whole Drew Peterson and the media aspect has just got to be absolutely nuts. Last week, there was a report that came out that Drew Peterson was considering going on this dopey show on Fox where you take a lie detector, you're on for a 10-minute segment and all of a sudden you're taking a lie detector and they can tell. Well, that in itself is just absolutely ridiculous. There was another report that Drew Peterson was looking for a Playboy model to represent him in his divorce. A story came out today, though, that caught my eye, that a picture was sent to Joel Brodsky, the attorney for Drew Peterson, of someone that looks an awful lot like Stacy Peterson. It was taken in Thailand by a retired police officer from Australia, I believe, and that was released to the press. So there are some legitimate stories, but most of them are just absolutely nonsense. I thought I'd get a hold of Joel Brodsky, the attorney for Drew Peterson, and see what he had to say. Okay, we're back. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network, and of course, my name is Dana Pritzer. If you've been following the investigation regarding the disappearance of Stacy Peterson, you'll see that the media, well, they run just about everything. And half of what you see and read about this investigation is just plain and simple speculation and crap. If Drew Peterson or his lawyer was interviewed and they said, you know, we like watching American Idol, the next day there would be a headline saying Drew Peterson's going to be on American Idol. And you just got to sit and shake your head. But when I look at a story that came out today, the Joel Brodsky, Drew Peterson's lawyer, did a press release about a picture that was sent to him from a retired police officer of a girl in Thailand. By God, it sure looks like Stacy Peterson. I thought I'd bring on Joel Brodsky tonight to talk about it. Hi, Joel.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing good. And, you know, I'm not trying to be flip as far as the comments go, but it seems like half or three quarters of what you see or what you read as far as this investigation goes is just utter nonsense. And it must get sickening for both you and your client. But here, I've been looking at this picture, and I've been looking at the, the Find Stacy Peterson website and the Fox News website, and this picture is eerily, resembles Stacy Peterson. What can you tell us about it?
Well, it was sent to me by a retired police officer, with Australian. I'm sorry, Australian police officer. That's right, living in Thailand, who sent it to me, saying that you know, he watches American news channels that they get in Thailand, and that he'd kind of seen this story a few times, and he saw this girl at this food court in Thailand, in Phuket, I believe, Thailand. And he thought it looked like Stacy, so he surreptitiously snapped a couple of pictures, and then he emailed them to me. And I took a look at them and compared them to some of the pictures on the Find Stacy Peterson website. And there's a few pictures there that you know, I think has a striking resemblance. And I asked a couple other people to look at it, and they also said that there's a striking resemblance. So I asked Drew to come in the office and take a look at it. And he said that he couldn't be 100% positive that it was similar, that but you know, he noticed that the skin tone, the skin color was different, the hairstyle was different, the hair color was different. But she's also looking, you're also only getting a profile.
Right, exactly.
So he just couldn't be 100% sure. But so I thought I'd put it out there, let people make their own judgment, and maybe also the girl in the picture, if this gets sent around, you know, through the media, may even come forward.
And
if not her, I'm assuming if it's Stacy, she's still going to remain in hiding.
I think it's important also that the public knows that, yes, there's an ongoing investigation, but also that you and your client are taking the investigation seriously, because there's been so much, again, speculation and nonsense that's going on in the media. I understand, and I'm not sure if you could talk about it or not, that you were at a hearing today. Maybe you can share some of that information with us.
Oh, yeah. We were. We filed a petition. You know, they seized Drew's cars, his computers, his he's an ex police officer, so he has some firearms, and lots of other stuff from his home and the cars about almost 3 months ago. And they gave us no indication when we'd ever get it back. You know, Drew's renting a car now. These were two paid-for cars. And so we filed a motion to get the property back, and the judge held an evidentiary hearing on that today, where we presented a forensic expert who testified that the police have had more than enough time to process the evidence, gather the, you know, whatever trace evidence there is, and to fire the guns and keep copies of the bullets and do everything they need to do, and that there's no valid reason for them to hang on to this property anymore. You know, time is up, and it's time to give the property back.
And was there any decision made, or is it reserved?
The judge said he's going to rule on February 27th.
Okay.
My read of that is he's telling the, but he was, you know, he knocked down a couple of the state's arguments when the state argued that they should be able to keep the property forever until or until they completed, until they felt their investigation had been completed. They judge shot that argument down, and so my feeling is that what the judge was saying by continuing it to the 27th for the ruling is telling the state, look, if you're going to do anything, if you haven't completed anything, you've got 3 weeks to do it. Do it, because on the 27th, I'm giving this property back.
One last question before I let you go, Mr. Broski, and I thank you for coming on. Is in the media here last week, there was a lot of speculation regarding Drew and a possible appearance on this. I can't even think of the name of the show right now, where you go on and you take a lot.
The lie detector show on Fox.
The lie detector show.
Moment of truth.
That's what it's called. Tell us about that. What's going on?
Well, we don't know. We have no idea where that came from.
That's my point.
But my feeling is that, you know, it's sweeps month coming up.
Yep.
And perhaps they were looking for a little more publicity in sweeps month. You know, like yesterday, there was some article out that Drew thought he was thinking of getting a divorce and was going to hire a divorce attorney who had posed in Playboy. And, you know, that rumor came out the same day that her pictures appeared on the Playboy website. So
right.
I think a lot of people may be taking advantage of this investigation in Drew's name for perhaps publicity reasons.
Yeah,
the timing is very suspicious.
And that was my point at the start of the show. And you know what's going to be next week? Drew Peterson on Dancing with the Stars. And maybe he should be. I don't know.
Well, I bet he may get a lie detector. No, but Dancing with the Stars, I suppose, yeah. The fee is enough.
I know he could dance with the stars while he takes a polygraph test. I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, Joel Broski, thank you, sir.
All right, thank you very much.
I'll stay in touch. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye bye.
That's Attorney Joel Brodsky for Drew Peterson. You know, there's an investigation going on, yes. There's answers that need to be given and hopefully some sort of conclusion. And I'm not making light of this, but I am making light of the media and how they've been handling this. And it's just, you know, enough is enough. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. I'm Dana Pretzer, and we'll be right back. And that's exactly my point, is that, again, I'm not making fun of the fact that there's a missing person and an unexplained death of another. It's the fact that the media has just gone absolutely nuts with this guy. Absolutely nuts. Now, what is Joel Brodsky doing? I've heard Joel Brodsky do interviews and say, I'm doing this purposely. I'm doing this because O.J. and Robert Blake were in the media all the time. All the time, and they got off. And I'm doing this for my client. And if charges are filed against him, this may backfire on him. This may not. What do I think about Drew Peterson? And is he culpable in something like this? I guess the evidence will show. But they need to do an investigation, not worry about, well, Drew Peterson said this, and Drew Peterson wants to have a Playboy bunny as his attorney and all this sort of stuff. Because, ladies and gentlemen in the press, Drew Peterson is yanking your chain. If he's telling you some of this stuff, he's seeing that you're reporting it and he's having a good chuckle about it. Is he responsible? We'll see. Is that picture of Stacey Peterson Stacey Peterson? I don't know. You can look at it one way or another. It's a profile shot. I see some similarities, eerie similarities. Some people say, no, it's not even close. We shall see. But talking to you the way that we do, giving you the straight scoop, is what's important. I'm not really interested if Drew Peterson is going to go on a lie detector show, the moment of truth, and in a 5-minute segment take a polygraph test, because anyone that's involved in law enforcement or any sort of investigations or law know that there's a lot more to polygraph tests than that. And I highly doubt that an attorney would allow their client to take a polygraph test, because most don't. Polygraph tests are lie detectors, but they're also truth verifiers. And are they admissible in court? No. And something like this, who knows what would happen? Let's hope the Illinois State Police, whoever is investigating this case, gets on it, gets reporting it, and hopefully we'll get some answers. That's it. That's the show for tonight. My name's Dan Pretzer. I remind you, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live, listen to podcasts of shows, daily commentaries, you name it. Of course, the creme de la creme, I like to say, of blogs is scaredmonkeys.com. We'll be back next week. I'm sure we'll have lots to talk about, especially with the DeVries show coming up on Sunday. And again, stay tuned to scaredmonkeys.com for breaking information there about the disappearance of Natalie Holloway. Thank you to my guest. Thank you to you, because without you, well, there wouldn't be much of a show. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.